Rob proves that global warming is caused by Glenn Beck's unregulated vocal emissions. Ken denies global warming exists because it's not mentioned in the Bible. Jerry makes a compelling argument to privatize the entire climate change industry. All that and more on this week's exciting episode of the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
to remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode... What episode is it?
Six.
Episode six of the Midwest Peace Process. This is Ken. I'm back after a sabbatical. I've come back cleansed and whole and ready to tackle one of our favorite topics.
Tanned and well-rested.
Yes, yes. I did not listen to last week's out of protest and anger. The episode was conducted without me. I heard it was terrible.
Yeah, it was bad.
Unlistenable. It might be removed from the internet just on principle. So we're going to try to get the ship righted this week. So I guess no listener feedback this week that we
want to introduce your teammates here, Ken?
Well, introduce yourselves.
I'm
this
Rob.
Is all about me. I was gone last week. You guys are up one on me. So
this is I'm Rob. Jerry.
Hey, all right. Onwards we go.
Now, while I was gone last week, did you guys assume a different role, or did you assume the same roles and just were missing a vital cog in the machine?
We pretended we were you.
Ooh.
Yeah. Sometimes you said Ken would say this stupid thing right here.
That would explain why it was such a bad episode. It all comes together now. Excellent. So after much, I guess, delay and consternation, we have decided to... take on global warming, right?
Yes, the much-anticipated global warming episode.
And kind of topical, I guess, as it always is, because there's always something popping up on the news, I guess, some new wrinkle, some new study, some new Al Gore unwatched infomercial about global warming that keeps it at the forefront. So I think it's a good topic to tackle, to highlight some of the politicization and... businessification, if I can make up a word, of something that may have scientific validity, but it gets kind of lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
I think both sides have shanghaied this for their own ill gain and both completely missed the point. And I think that's what we're here for, is to cut through that crap.
Yeah, I think just the fact that we've been talking about this for 40 years now and there's still no general consensus...
And we're still here, right? We haven't all died. We're not all
right.
Sterile. The Earth is not uninhabitable.
Right. It hasn't been turned into a cinder.
Right.
Do we have some kind of collective guilt that brings this on? Maybe we just feel bad about something and we have to...
I think there is a segment of the population that does, right? And that's one of the things that bugs me about the... I don't want to say the environmental movement because that's not really fair. But you know, the whole man is a virus subset of those people just...
Every mammal on this planet instinctively develops a natural equilibrium with the surrounding environment, but you humans do not. You move to an area and you multiply and multiply until every natural resource is consumed. And the only way you can survive is to spread to another area. There is another organism on this planet that follows the same pattern. Do you know what it is? A virus.
They need to commit seppuku and just end it right now. That would be good for
me. Uh-oh.
You got to put a link to that.
Seppuku. That speaks bad. Yeah.
Japanese ritual suicide. Thank you. So,
what do you think, man?
I hope those people that believe that don't have kids and don't own a house and don't have a job and don't drive cars and, you know, I bet they do. And that makes me scratch my head a little bit. So,
I think there's a difference between having a car and trying to have the biggest car that wastes the most emissions because you think it's awesome. You know, I think there's a consciousness in there that's important.
But, and that's good. I mean, right. if somebody wants to drive a moped because they feel that's environmentally responsible, I think that's wonderful. Just don't tell me I have to drive a moped. That's none of your business. So, don't know. That's
yeah, I agree. I mean, I'd like to see people make that decision because it not only benefits the environment, but it benefits themselves, you know. I don't understand the mentality that says, well, I'm going to drive this SUV that gets 8 miles to the gallon just because I can afford it. Well, why right. waste your money on gas doing that when you could buy a much more fuel-efficient vehicle and save yourself some dough?
Right. And I feel like that's one of the – we talk about kind of like the evils that have crept into our American psyche and – you know, whether you think we've lost our connection with God or whatever we think that issue is, one thing that I think is that we have the feeling that if we've earned that money, then we can spend it on ourselves any way we want, and there's no moral obligation or moral structure about how we spend that. So basically, I can go out there to the gas station right now, pay 25 cents for my 20-ounce drink, Immobile on the Run, because the Cardinals scored six.
And lost, right?
They did lose, but I'm
in
still
epic fashion, I might add.
I'm still going to get my slushie, though.
That's good. Got to get yours.
But yeah, the idea that I can go pay 10 bucks and fill up my lawnmower portable gas tank of gasoline and then pour it right into my yard. Yeah, I could do that. But there's a feeling like just because I could do that, that's a good thing to do because you can do that. And I disagree with that feeling that just because you could do it, just because you have the money, makes it something that's equally valid to do.
So do you need to pass a law preventing people from doing that? Is that the solution?
No. Yeah, you can't pass a law. See, that's where I go. Like, you can't say – Well, you should pass a law that no gasoline in your yard, though. But
Is it even a moral issue, like you said?
I think it is. If we feel like your car's emissions and your gas in your own yard affects other people, then I think it's a moral issue.
What if I don't think that?
What if I just
Well, I mean, that's a good point because not everyone agrees on that right. subject. So
maybe that's the part of that makes the environmental issue so interesting is that what I do might affect you. That if I create a business right next to your house and I put out a bunch of emissions and you have to breathe those in, well, I'm not breathing them in. It's not my problem. It now becomes your problem.
Okay, I'll give you that. But we're not talking about individuals,
right?
You sure. know, burning gas, running their lawnmower or whatever. We're generally talking about something on a much larger scale. You know, a factory or a power plant or something right. that's polluting right. the air. And I can see that argument. I can also see the argument that, you know, we are causing some sort of damage to the environment when sure. all of us behave irresponsibly.
Right, right. Sadly, some of my right-wing brethren would disagree with that, but I think you'd have to be kind of a slack-jawed moron to not think we cause some ill effects on the environment. I would hope yeah. we can all establish that as a right. baseline.
But I'm still not willing to go as far as saying that, you know, that's a moral issue, that, you know, that when an individual chooses to ignore all that and behave what we'll call irresponsibly, that is somehow a moral issue, that they've caused harm to society in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we could destroy ourselves by destroying the environment, and that's just, maybe that's what we do.
That's how we roll.
If that's our choice, then, all right, we did it. Shame on us, but...
But what if you're destroying my environment?
Well, then you got to go with the majority, Rob. If 51% of the people want to destroy the environment, you've got to conform, damn it.
Pollutants.
You learned that in your grade school fifth grade camp, remember?
I don't remember. I was too
busy. See?
I was too busy being indoctrinated.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe pollutants are the great democracy of the world. Maybe it is the true world government.
We can say whatever we want, but our actions speak a little bit louder,
right? I mean, yeah, I think China just voted some emissions over into my house.
Yeah, well.
When you say environment, your environment, what do you mean? Like, your neighbor is doing something that is impacting your house or your yard, or do you mean your environment, as in the entire earth is mine because I live here too?
I kind of feel the most just by the way I live my life is just the air, I guess. I would say the air is the big common denominator because I'm not outside farming. I can't even grow a tomato back there. But the air that I breathe is affected by everything around me. And so that's probably the most typical example.
So we know what pollution is, right?
Right.
We've established that. We've got laws against it. Are we saying that those laws need to be extended to include other things that we don't currently think of as pollution? Like, you know, running your lawnmower for 6 hours in one day, or
smoking.
Smoking.
Already got some of that going on, right?
All right, I think an example that's even better. I know we're the Midwest peace process, but let's hit the West Coast a little bit, where you have the Columbia River going down through the desert, and everyone's picking off their water. And so by the time it gets to, you know, Phoenix or something, there's no more water left in the river. And so a law that says you can't water your lawn for 8 hours a day, I mean, that's an interesting concept because there's only so much water to go around. You know, as far as driving your car, you know, running your lawnmower, you know, that I don't think people are going to run their lawnmower for 8 hours a day. But I know a lot of people on the West Coast that would like to have a nice lush green lawn because they watered it 4 hours in the desert.
Yeah. Well, my personal take on that is twofold. First of all, water management in the West has been perverted by, namely, the Bureau of Land Management. So, yes, I'm blaming the government again.
Tell us about this. Shocking.
Well, before the federal government took over managing water supplies in the Western states, you didn't really have these problems because people didn't live in places where there wasn't water.
Right.
And, you know, it was only once they started building dams and, you know, started regulating where the water went that started running into those problems. And
we have a human right to water, though, right?
Not a civil right.
A civil right. A human
well,
right.
I said my response was twofold. And the other half of that is you have a right to live, okay? And you have certain rights that are necessary to sustain your life. Would I say you have a right to water? I don't know if I'd go that far. Mm-mm. I mean, you have the right to obtain as much water as you can afford or as you can legally obtain, but I don't know if I would go as far as to say you have a right to water.
Might have to go find the water.
I would also say that, you know, like Sam Kennison said about, you know, the starving kids in Africa.
Right.
You want to solve world hunger? Send these people a guy that says, hey, look.
You know what this is?
Yeah, this is sand. You live in a desert. We have deserts in America. Clip. We just don't live in them.
Yeah.
And that's not true anymore. We do have people living out in the desert, right, and they're expecting, right, you know, the government to provide them with water and all these other things.
Golf courses.
Yeah, right, maybe right. You shouldn't live in the desert.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's easy for me to say, sitting here, you know, ensconced lush at the convergence of the two largest rivers in the hemisphere.
Watch out, a flood might happen.
Yeah. But, you know, at some point, somebody went west and they got to Death Valley and somebody said, hey, this might be a good place to live. Yeah, are you kidding me?
Right.
Right. Right. And when you're talking about rights to water, I think that a listener has provided some feedback about specifying what rights we talk about when we talk about rights, whether you're talking about a civil right or a human right or a legal right. You know, do you have a legal right to water? I'm like, I'm not so sure.
I'm quite sure you don't.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't believe that's the case. I think the only scenario I could imagine in my mind where you would have a right to water is if you and another person were, like, I don't know, trapped in a cave or something, and, you know, one of you had this gigantic canteen full of water, and he refused to give any to the other person.
Reminds me of the Three Amigos.
you know, if that were
lip balm.
if that were the case, then maybe I could see you making that argument that, hey, well, he had the only water available to both of us. He had to share, otherwise I was going to die. So
yeah, but then you go partner's tail on him and you kill him and take his water, right? So
yeah, well, it's not a wise decision on the part of the water bearer, but
yeah, that might go poorly for him to hoard the water. Wow, we went all the way from global warming to murder. So.
Just a thought. I'd have to either do the same, but I'm afraid that ship has sailed.
Well, okay, so let's backtrack a little bit here and go back to the pollution thing, because I mean, clean air, clean water. Obviously, we all want those things.
Those are good things.
I mean, I don't think there's anybody out there saying, "Oh yeah, the air around here just isn't dirty enough for me."
How would you in your idealized anarchistic world, how would you regulate the air or water pollution? How would you deal with that? You can't, well, right?
No, you can. You just have to forego this notion of public property. And everything has to be privately owned. Somebody's got to own absolutely everything. And like, then...
Like the air and the water?
No, I'm just talking the land. But,
trying to figure out how you mark borders on the air.
That includes, struggling. That includes the airspace above the land and the water that flows over the land.
But if I own my land and I pollute the air above it and that air floats into Rob's air, then...
Then Rob has an action he can take against you. Because you have polluted the air.
I don't see that going anywhere.
Right. Well, I mean, it happens now under our current system. If a public utility or something is polluting the air, people downwind of that utility file a lawsuit against
it. Right. But it happens because both parties recognize that authority, right?
Well, I guess that's one way of looking at it. I think it happens because both parties recognize that one is polluting the air.
Yeah, but they don't want, they wouldn't. If they could get away with not recognizing it, they would in the case of the person being sued.
Right. And, true. And the person being sued, the company being sued, their main role is the legal tack that they probably need to take is that what they're doing isn't pollution at all. It's just some simple like carbon monoxide. It's just like carbon dioxide without the two. It's like even better.
Wow. Little Bill Nye Science Guy interlude there. That's good.
Brilliant.
So I equate this to somewhat look at these world organizations that are trying to regulate things, right? Like the WTO and, you know, talking about trying people for war crimes. And you know, who recognizes these bodies as authoritative? I mean, they huff and they puff, but does anything really happen? I mean, they'll release a report and pound the podium at a press conference, but nothing happens, right? I mean, George Bush didn't go on trial for being a war criminal or...
You know,
Boeing and Airbus are going at it in the WTO, but does anything really happen? No. So, I mean, yeah. I don't view under this anarchistic model. So, I mean, so I pump a bunch of crap in the air and it goes over to your space and somebody comes over and says, hey, you've damaged them. And yeah, okay. I don't know how that would work unless I submit myself to that authority. I don't view that as being something I would have to adhere to.
Well, I guess it would depend on whether or not you felt... your customers cared about that, because a company that pollutes indiscriminately is eventually going to offend enough people that it's going to become public knowledge that you pollute.
Maybe.
Well, I think that would be one of the...
It's one way.
The victim's recourse would be to, you know, make that as widely known as possible and to do as much damage to your reputation as they could. And if you're okay with rolling the dice and saying, well, I know my customers don't care if I pollute, so I'm going to go right on doing it.
I think that happens all the time. I think a major point of major purpose of companies is to bet on that reputation and to discredit those that claim pollution and offer lower price and say, look, free market says, look, I give you a lower price and I get more consumers, and these guys who are complaining, they're just bitter. Or they're, you know, whatever they are.
Yeah, the current green focus. I mean, look at all the companies. That's certainly a big thing that they tout, right? Their greenness. And
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's a selling point. You know, maybe my stuff's a little more expensive, but it's local or it's cleaner or it's, you know, whatever, whatever other thing you can do to justify the higher price and say, hey, you're making a morally superior choice
right.
by picking my product.
Well, that's them kind of co-opting that language.
Ooh, beautiful.
Well, in some cases, it's actually true, right?
Right. Right.
I mean, those products are more eco-friendly, or they are locally grown, or they are organic, or whatever. There's obviously potential there for a lot of fraud, too. There's companies that are going to slap the green label on their product, even though it's not green.
Right.
But guess what? A lot of those companies slap the Energy Star label on their product, which is, you know, something the government is supposed to be regulating, and their products are not energy efficient. So the same is true under our current system.
Yeah.
That fraud still goes on.
Oh, sure. I'm just saying it wouldn't end under some other model, I don't think. It might change shape or whatever, but that's always going to exist. And
yeah,
I don't know if it would work itself out. What if I'm not a business? What if I just like to play my gangster rap really loud and, you know, I'm noise polluting my neighbors and they're not happy about it because they like, you know, the Carpenters or something, yeah, you know. Sorry, this is my space. You know,
if you blasted the Carpenters, then. I think one of my theorems that seems to be coming up here is that I think that corrupting of an idea is not always a government function. That is also a free market commerce, free enterprise function.
Sure.
That the government plays that role as well. You got your mm-hmm. Energy Star, and I think we all know those. But I think this idea that if everything was left up to free enterprises, then everything would be more pure is a false thought.
Well,
and what makes me probably lean left is I probably rely on a solution to that being more a government solution. But at least I acknowledge that it's there, which I don't really see on the right in general.
Have you ever read Consumer Reports?
I have. Fantastic. I don't read it a lot. But
you know what Angie's List is?
I do know what Angie's List is.
I do not. Educate me.
Angie's List is a website that you can subscribe to, and people put reviews of professional services. So, you know, like electricians and plumbers and doctors and all kinds of stuff. They post their own reviews of ones that they've used and that they've liked or that they don't like. And, you know, if you subscribe then to the website, you can get access to all those reviews. And Consumer Reports is obviously the same thing about products rather than services. My point in bringing those two up is those two are fairly unique in our economy. I mean, there are other consumer advocates and, you know, protection organizations like that, but I think under a free market system, you would have a lot more of those kinds of services. You'd have a lot more Consumer Report style magazines and websites and so forth out there, all competing, and you know they would be trying to scoop one another and you know find the biggest polluter out there so that they could,
right.
you know, expose them. I think all of that would happen in a free market system. And the reason it doesn't happen now is because so many people believe the government is there to fulfill that role, whether they're fulfilling it or not.
Right.
I also think, though, that
if that became more widespread, I mean, I'll compare it, I guess, to like Amazon reader reviewers.
Uh-huh.
There becomes so much noise out there and so much crap because 380 million people in America are not all smart, right? So I think that the usefulness of that is going to get diluted the more and more people, I think, that participate in that, though, too.
You need some kind of integrity. I think this is also folds well with your Underwriters Laboratory comments from episode whatever it was.
Yeah, you got to trust the source rather than just being inundated with, you know.
Right, and that's the problem with online reviewers.
Right.
Like I'm reading, like, this is the greatest album I've ever heard. Like, are you the guy that just put out this album?
Yeah. Johnny Hates Jazz is the best album I've ever heard. No, it isn't.
Comment by Johnny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and look at just reading online news articles. The most entertaining part is reading the reader comments, right? I mean, just because people are insanely crazy. So it's, I just think if that proliferated, you would get, that whole message would get diluted. So you'd have to have some, like you said, integrity to what am I reading and why do I believe it? Did this person really use the service or do they have an axe to grind or,
right.
you know, or is this guy a plant? He is actually works for the other company and he's, you know, saying these people grind up baby kittens and that's what they use to fertilize your lawn. And all of a sudden that company's reputation's besmirched. So,
or, you know, to take it one step further, boy, we're really going now, but the, like a college professor, you know, they have the kind of the rate my professor thing
right
online now, which is a little bit like this, but if you read those comments on there of whatever the professors are, they're like, you should totally take Mr. Jackson, he's so easy, we only had homework like twice a month and it was super easy, you know. So those professors get rated real high by whatever their consumer is, quote unquote,
sure,
whatever their consumer is, and then that becomes the rating of that professor. And is that actually a good rating of what that professor's providing? What that would do, what, take it one step further, suppose that professor's dean, when they're giving out salary raises, takes a little spin by ratemyprofessors.com and sees how they're doing online, you know?
Right.
If that gets in there, boy, you know, you're going to have some, it's going to be a free market race to be the most entertaining professor ever.
Right.
Juggling and clowns and circus acts.
Midgets like and balloons and every type of fun imaginable.
That sounds pretty good.
Well, what you're describing, though, is, I mean, it comes back to what we talked about in last week's episode. It's caveat emptor, you know, because right. the consumer just needs to be smarter.
Yeah.
We need to force people to be smarter.
Yeah.
Because right now, they don't have to be smart.
Well, I wouldn't say you need to force them to. There needs to be ramifications to not being smarter.
Well, it's the same thing in my eyes.
And they'll either adapt or they won't, but they have to live with the consequences of whatever that is.
Right now, they can, you know, lean on the government as a crutch. They can say, oh, well, the government regulates this, so I don't really need to worry about it. I know it's safe, you know, right. Or I know it's not fraudulent, or, you know, it's on the internet. It must be true.
Right.
Because the government wouldn't allow anything untrue to be published on the internet.
Well, and the irony of all this, I guess, because we've gone way off track, but not as far off track maybe as you think, because the global warming or climate change, whatever we're calling it now, is one of those things that people, I think, throw their hands up at, right, and say, I don't understand this.
Yeah.
Government, right. You solve it. And we're right. putting it in the hands of people that understand it even less than we do.
Right.
Right. And they're going to take that message and they're going to use it to do something they want to do anyway.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily have anything to do with climate change.
Okay. Right. Well, let's dig into that, because I just want to ask the question.
Let's get ready to ramble.
Do you believe in climate change or global warming or whatever we're calling it this week?
I do.
Is anthropogenic climate change, is that a real thing?
I want to go ahead and say yes.
Of course you're going to say yes. So I am going to give my 5 points of climate change that will answer that question in a roundabout kind of way. Okay.
Well, you can't wait.
This is going to be, I mean, hang on.
Well, that's why you took last week off, was so you could write all these down.
That's right. Yeah, they're all monosyllabic words, though, so I can say them. So, point number one, climate change is real. I think that happens. The Earth has a climate, right? I think we can all agree with that. And it changes.
Yeah.
Irrespective of whether man has an influence on that or not, that climate changes.
With you so far.
Okay, so we can agree on that. So I will also contend that man influences the climate. But I personally believe that the man-made changes pale in comparison to natural climate change. And that makes it very hard to siphon out the piece that is man-made versus what would have happened anyway. It's not a controlled experiment. You can't make an Earth over here and not have man and have an Earth over here and have man and see what the differences are. So there's a lot of variables that go into that. And I think the science of it is worth pursuing. I think it has been pursued. I think it's been, to use Rob's word, co-opted by a lot of people for a political message. But the science is there, and I think it's worth continuing to dig in too. But I also think the people that have co-opted that message have something to be gained from raising that alarm, as opposed to some altruistic reason to save the planet or deny that climate change or global warming exists. So, but I think one thing we can all agree on is we do bad stuff. I mean, there's pollution, there's lots of things we do that corrupt the climate. And it's, as far as I can tell, the only one we have. And I don't think that allowing that science to be co-opted to do crazy expensive stuff that lines people's pockets or radically changes people's lives and has questionable results is a good thing, is a good knee-jerk reaction to have to that. So I would say before doing those types of things that have questionable results, we need to be reasonable. And I don't think either side of the debate that's politicized climate change is being reasonable about their position.
Yeah.
I'm down with that.
Oh, see? We're not supposed to all agree. It's terrible.
I think one thing... Go ahead, Jerry. I'm just formulating over here.
Okay. I was just going to say that I tend to agree with you. I think that in the end, we just don't know.
Right.
And that's the part that irritates me the most, is the people on both sides of this yes. argument claim to know.
Right.
You know, beyond a shadow of a doubt.
The jury is not out. The jury yeah. is in. It's the debate is over.
Right. And I refuse to believe that.
Right.
That, you know, like you said, it's a complex system. There are way too many variables. There's nobody that understands it all well enough to be able to say with certainty. And I'll just throw one thing out. Some, you know, one little factoid that has stuck in my head for a long time. When Mount Pinatubo erupted in, what was that, 92, I think, I just remember hearing the story that it had thrown more greenhouse gas up into the atmosphere in that one eruption than all the cars that had ever been manufactured on the entire planet up to that point in history.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if that's true. Our listeners will probably, you know,
or if it's urban
crucify legend. Me for saying that. But if it's true, it kind of invalidates the entire argument, in my opinion, because, like you said, Ken, it's our influence pales by comparison to all the natural phenomena that influence the right. climate. So,
and I know that this is a lot based on, you know, people trying to take computer models and model the past, you know, try to get us to the point where they can say, well, here's where the present is and here's where it's going to go based on my computer model, but you have to be really careful with that, because I think we all know computer models, you know, all it takes is fractions. And when you compound interest those fractions, it can lead right. you to some crazy results. I think if you look at population models, the same thing happens, right? I mean, if you look at predictions in the past of what the world population was going to do, it was just crazy, and none of that has come true. And I think you look at weather models that we use now, we can't predict the weather tomorrow with certainty, because it's, you know, once you let that model go, stuff's going to happen, and there's error built into there, both because of the people that program it and because of things you don't know and things higher order effects you have to simplify. And when you do that, you are tainting those results the further you walk away from that control point you have. So when I see somebody saying, oh, in 20 years there's going to be this or there's going to be that, I look at that as a political poll where you say my error is plus or minus 5%. Your poll doesn't mean anything. It's statistically insignificant. So I guess what I'd like to see them do, and you've seen stories recently that come out. I've got a couple things written down here. You know, the CERN cloud experiment. I think, I don't know if you guys read that article. You got to be careful with this stuff, too. And this is why the right wing has it so wrong, is you can have 99 stories that say this is happening and here's the science to back it up. And then you can have one article that says, CERN cloud experiment proves that cosmic rays cause global warming, not man. And your Dale Earnhardt Jr. hat-wearing redneck guy is going to say, oh, see, knew it. Not global warming. It's all bullshit. So, you know, but if you dig,
hey there.
Did you like that? So, but if you dig a little deeper, and I did, I sent you guys the one article, and it was like an angry right-wing, you know, bloggy guy, op-ed dude that was saying, oh, see, the debate's over. Global warming caused by cosmic rays. Well, okay, you're just as guilty as the people that you're claiming, you know, are throwing their hands up saying the debate's over. If you dig deeper, what the CERN cloud experiment proves is that these cosmic rays have a disproportionate effect on cloud formation and affect the climate and the temperature more so than what the computer models are taking into account. It doesn't invalidate the computer models, but it's pointing out here's something you're not taking into account that could affect your results. I think that's the kind of debate that needs to happen. So improve those models and make them better, and then I think your results become more meaningful.
Right.
But there's been enough scandal, I think. You know, there's the idiocy of just ignoring science, which I think the right is unfortunately guilty of on many things, and this is certainly one of them. But there's also been some scandal on the other side. You know, when you talk about the climate gate or the email gate, you know, where they were trying to throw data out to show that the past was something different than it was. You know, the one article I read said that they were throwing out data that showed this medieval warming period, because there has been periods of warming and cooling in the Earth's past. So there's been things that have been misreported and overstated, you know, exaggerated, whether it be in the media or in the scientific community. And it's hard to filter all that. And once, if I'm a guy that's a skeptic, I'm going to look at that data and I'm immediately going to throw my hands up and just say, okay, your motives are in question for me because you're not being honest. Right. So I don't think you can blame people for walking away from that debate when you find out that your opponent, if you will, is presenting you with untrue things to try to convince you of something. Why don't you tell me the truth and convince me? Why do you have to lie?
Right. And it just seems like over the last 2 years or so, there have been a lot of those types of stories that, you know, you're talking about, the climate gate and this latest thing with the cloud experiment. Before that, it was the global conference on climate change that happened in Brussels, I think. And, you know, that was the meeting where they were all supposed to finally vote once and for all and say, yes, we have consensus, and they couldn't do it because they didn't
really
have the votes.
Okay.
So, I mean, all of those things kind of chip away at this.
But do you think those things are coming out because of, you know, now it's all coming to light and the corruption on the science, the scientist side is all, you know, coming to a breaking point? Or do you think it's just more people looking for things, you know, kind of like what always happens at election time? Hey, we found this video from 1898 of this politician, you know, that's not because there's more evidence of that, but there's a lot more people, a lot more fired up to find stuff to put out there.
That's entirely possible.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. But why are you throwing data out? Or why don't you say, I mean, if you were going to do an experiment,
right,
and you were going to report it, and you wanted to throw data out because you thought it was an outlier, I think you have an obligation to point out, I threw this data out, and here's why I think it's an outlier.
Right.
Okay, well, if that data is an outlier, I could equally claim that the data right now is an outlier. Sure. There's something else going on that's causing this warming or this cooling that makes it an outlier. And if you look at it 500 years from now, you're going to throw that data out as an outlier.
So. Right. And I think one thought is that in the science community, as I understand it, as not a scientist, but having some insight into it, like the claim against your research that you altered the data to arrive at your conclusion is like, that's like the big, oh no, you didn't. of scientific accusations. I mean, you could be like, nice theorem, buddy, but it's obvious and I can't believe you spent a year working on that. Like that's normal. But if you make a claim that something's falsified on purpose, that's like the death knell of scientists.
Okay.
So it's a big claim to make. So I don't know how that plays into how we're thinking about throwing out outliers. But if somebody's intentionally doing it, I mean, they're just a crap scientist.
Yeah.
You know,
And I don't know that the scientists who day to day are doing the global warming or the climate change research, I don't know that they've come in and said the debate's over. I think they are continuing to improve those models. I don't think they've walked away and said, well, you know, we found out what pi is, we're done. So there's some layer in between us and them that is Shanghaied that and is doing something with it. And I don't think it's very hard to see that those same people are benefiting from it.
Right. And here's what I want to say that layer is, just my abstract thought. And the reason why this issue gets so charged up is that I'll give you an analogy by speaking of ways of analogies. People that have a hard time accepting any kind of faith argument, if you give them some kind of, you know, religion, some kind of faith situation, they're like, well, I like what you're saying. I can kind of get behind that. But once I accept this tenet, You know, once whatever it is, then I'm going to have to accept everything that you tell me. Once I take that first step, you know, if you're trying to evangelize and convince somebody to be a Christian, and you speak about Jesus's message, and it starts to take a little hold in somebody, one thing that runs through their mind is if I accept what you're saying right here, I want to have to, I might as well just quit work tomorrow. I'm just going to go get this Bible and read this thing and, you know, throw out my entire worldview. And it causes a lot of resistance. So for this global warming thing, I think the idea is if you even, if let's say somebody that's trying to deny the global warming, if you say that there's even a hint of man-made effect on the warming, well, now I got to buy your big world government solution,
right?
And you're going to take away my light bulbs, and I can't deal with that. So here, let me Google here and find a zillion articles of people that think just like me that can discredit what you're trying to say, because I cannot accept that. Same thing with the other way. You know, if you're tree hugging, riding your bike in the bike lanes. Why do we have bike lanes anyway? Silly bikers, you know, and
sorry, listeners.
And that's the way you lean. And, you know, this comes out, you know, it hits your sweet spot there. And you're going to go. And the idea that, wait, you know, maybe this isn't quite true is a quite a leap of faith to make for someone on that side that they just won't get. So that's why it gets so charged, is that you can't just say that, okay, man has some effect, because, oh, if it has some effect, you know, we got to do everything.
And I'll show my right wing bristliness here, but I agree. If I say out loud right now into this recording that I believe AGW is true, that implication is there that I must buy in.
Right.
We got to sign Kyoto. We got to do this. We got to do all the. Well, it doesn't have to mean that.
Right.
But it does in our current political climate. It exactly means that, because that's what the left has made it mean.
You're right. Because what, do you want to destroy the human race? You know, what kind of guy are you? You know.
Right.
What's wrong with you, Ken?
For the children.
Yeah. Just the fact that the name of it has changed.
That tells you a lot.
And to throw my analogy, it's the name change is just like the creationism versus the intelligent design thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much so.
Right. Where if you get into a corner and it stops taking effect, just like shift some name a little bit.
Right.
Because
rebrand it.
The people that would defend the name change are the same people that would tell you that weather does not equal climate.
Right.
You know, that you can't, you know, people make the jokes
when it gets
down to 30 below in the winter. It's like, oh, it must be that global warming.
Yeah, it's that same guy with the hat.
Yeah, then it gets hot in the summer. They're like, see, global warming.
So they changed the name of it so that guys can't make that joke anymore.
But what happened the big year when we had all the hurricanes? Who was puffing their feathers out and rattling sabers when that was going on?
Right, because they made the claim that, hey, this is just the beginning, folks.
And then what happened next year? How many hurricanes did we have that year?
We went like two whole seasons without a named storm hitting the United States.
That's not evidence of anything. See, it's just this complete dishonesty. I mean, you got to think in your mind, like, are these people hoping that there's more hurricanes so they can get more people in their camp?
Come on, baby hurricane.
Right. Yeah, I think there's some people that actually do think that they want.
Certainly the cable news channels are
definitely. I'm thinking Al's just waiting for something to happen so he can say, see, told you. But then when nothing happens and somebody on the other side goes, okay, well, what's going on? Lack of this is not evidence of anything. Okay, so either way, you win. You've concocted a worldview that no matter what, it supports what you say. Well, I don't buy that. You're being dishonest to the point where you're pulling the wool over my eyes, and I'm just going to distrust you completely. And he might have something good to say, but it's lost in the noise.
I think the confusion of the isolated incident meaning large scale change is a pretty common one on both. Right. On both sides.
But I'll give you another example. Like a few weeks ago, I heard on the news that the summer of 2011 was the hottest on record in the United States. Okay, but then they went on to say that it broke a record that was set, you know, 75 years ago.
Right.
And okay, but if it's true that we're on this upward trend, then I would expect the hottest year on record
to be the last five.
Yeah, well, to have, you know, been the hottest year since last year.
Right.
Or like 2 right. years ago. Or well, something I did like that. You know, right, not right. 75 years ago.
Well, I tried to put my right winginess away and go look around and try to find some factoids that were, you know, position neutral, I guess.
Did you delete your web browser history?
I had to, yeah. Yeah. They came looking for me. Take my right winger card away. But I found that the average temperature, if you buy into the average temperature, and I've seen arguments on what that means and what that doesn't mean, but I think that's a valid thing to measure, but it's gone up about a degree in the last 100 years.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, within a tenth of a degree. But there's even questions about that, because the way our world is structured now is different than the way the world was structured then, right? Where do you measure average temperature? Where do you take all these different temperatures? You know, there's one of the things I saw that was a variable that they've had debate about whether they're accounting for this more accurately enough in the computer models, is the urban heat island phenomena. You know, if you right. take your temperature in the middle of New York City versus, you know, in Wyoming, right. there's a difference. Now, 100 years ago, there wouldn't have been as huge of a difference, probably. So you be real careful about what you mean by that. But there is consensus, I think we can say, that the Earth is warmer now than it was 100 years ago. Mm. But there's things in there that I think you have to kind of caveat that with. And, you know, they're trying to measure that against, okay, what was the world like 100,000 years ago or 50,000 years ago, and, you know, the CO2 levels and all those kinds of things. And that I think complicates the equation quite a bit as well. So I think there is some notion out there that there is a warming trend, but I think that's also been interspersed with warming and cooling. And I think that's borne out in the evidence too. So, and I think I also had read, and I might be getting this slightly wrong, and I'm sure somebody will tell me if I did, three of the top five hottest years on record happened more than 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then that kind of plays to what you were saying, Jerry. You would expect, if there's this disproportionate effect, that the top five hottest years would be 2006 through 2011. And that's probably an oversimplification, but you think it would be more stacked towards the present.
Right.
And I don't think that's borne out by the data.
Right. I think I saw some graph that, you know, there's climate going up, it's going right. down. You know, it's a little right. up and down kind of thing. And then, oh, look, last 20 years, you know, whatever they're calculating, I don't know what it was, you know, was hugely off the charts for what the measurable past was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's a little more compelling. I don't really,
is it,
you
know, though? I mean, go to the measuring. Channel 5 weather guy, and granted, his weather model is nothing, I'm sure, nearly as robust as what these climate models are. I hope
right.
not, anyway.
Right.
But tell that guy to predict the weather 5 years from now. Today, right. 5 years from now, what is he going to tell you? He's probably going to tell you it's going to be 1,400 degrees. You know, I mean, the computer model is going to go insane, because that's what computer models do. You know, it predicts the past better than it predicts the far future. So you need to be very careful how far you step that guy out. I get a little nervous when I see these little computer models and they, you know, and that assumes that the future is just like the present. And go back to one of those inflection points in the past. How is a computer model going to predict that inflection point?
Right.
It can't, right?
Right. Right.
It's not going to show a reverse trend where it all of a sudden goes from warming to cooling. It's just not going to do that.
Right.
So by definition, I think it's flawed to just declare the debate over based on that.
Discussing this, we looked at one side, it seems, where you have people looking to gain money and power, mostly political power,
right?
By taking some argument that's vague and put out by scientists, and I think the scientists would tell you it's vague. That's why they're still working on it,
right? I would hope they'd say that.
Right. Trying to get that power.
Mm-hmm.
I just
want to know what the motivation of the other side is. Is that what you're getting at?
No.
The motivation of the denier?
I know the motivation of the denier is because they're trying – I think the denier is trying to head off what they see is a sequence of logical steps that has to occur once you accept whatever the tenet is. Mm-hmm. That if you accept the AGW, well, then the logical step is, well, you can't do it in the state, you can't do it with the federal government, you can't do it with the nation. You got to do it in the world. That's Let's make the new world –
I would agree with that. It's going to change my life, or it's going to make me feel guilty that I'm causing this or whatever. But maybe, I think the politicians are co-opting the message just in the same fashion. Hey, I can latch on to this. And, you know, if I just stand up and I'm, you know, defiantly denouncing that global warming exists, I know I'm going to get some votes.
But maybe it goes back to our some kind of latent guilt we have about the way we behave in the world. And we're talking about environmentalists, which is a classic kind of term. I mean, think about people that really care about the environment. I mean, you got the guy in the bike lane, but you also got the hunter out there that doesn't want his, you know, all of the things that he likes to go hunt out there to all go vanish or leave. You know, he wants to hunt on the same ground that he hunted with his father on, and he doesn't want that all changing or getting trash thrown on it. You know, so there's all kinds of people that care about
a wetland that he can't even go to anymore.
Exactly. So you got the government. You have the government side of that screws things up. But we also have this idea that if you're a corporation or a business or a person, and whatever is in your short term interest, you know, if we're gonna put all of our world's responsibility into capitalist enterprises. A capitalist enterprise's job is to make money for themselves and their shareholders. If we think mm-hmm. that's all you have to do, and you'll create an optimal environment due to reputation or PR, like I don't think that's flying with the public in general. So we got to think there's got to be something else. I don't know what. So maybe we concoct theories about global warming. I don't know, but you know, maybe we just generally feel like we're not doing right here somehow.
Well, do you think guilt is enough? Like, if we just mounted this huge education campaign worldwide to let everybody know that, hey, don't buy products that come with styrofoam in them, and don't, you know.
Right.
Don't buy a car that gets less than 40 miles to the gallon. And if we just educated every single person on the planet, do you think the guilt that they felt for doing the wrong thing would be enough?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so. It's not an effect you see right now, right?
Right.
So I think people don't react to that.
What do you mean, Jerry? I think I understood what you meant, but what do you mean it would be enough for what? Enough to affect change in the way people behave?
To solve the problem.
Right.
To reverse the trend, if we could all agree that there's a trend here and we need to do something about it.
I don't think so. I don't.
Maybe
I don't
over even... a very, very, very long time, maybe that would happen. I think people do what they're used to doing. So you need to get people used to doing something else, and that happens very slowly.
I think a good example is recycling. I think, you know, there's people that say, why would you recycle? It all goes in the trash anyway.
Oh, right.
You know, there's people that don't even like the recycling. But the idea, first of all, the whole idea of recycling is so much more common than it was 15 years ago.
Oh, sure.
And then just the idea, the whole idea that comes into your head when you have something in your hand that you're going to throw into the trash, and you're at least making a conscious decision of what it is you're holding in your hand and where it's going. I think that's a sea change from before. Like maybe you put it in your little recycling bin and like do the sign of the recycle. I don't know. You can't do the sign of the cross. You make a little triangle on your chest. I don't know what you do. You know, to get all excited about the fact you're recycling, it goes right into the trash. You know, maybe it does nothing. But as far as generational changes, the idea of throwing something away is different now than it was.
You don't have to believe in or not believe in or even have a debate about AGW to agree that recycling is a good thing. Right. So let's do that.
Right.
I also think dumping toxic waste in a river is probably not good.
Depends if it makes you money or not.
Well, you know, I guess. But I think we can all agree that that's bad. Let's not do that. So I think those are the kinds of sensible things. And recycling is a great example because even 20 years ago, 10 years ago, you know, there were people that turned their nose up at that like they do now. You know, I think that number line, that origin of where it's acceptable, not acceptable, has moved because people would turn, I don't need to recycle. It's stupid. Right. And now those same people are recycling. And like you said, you pick up a water bottle, you don't throw it in the trash. You go to find that recycler because it's in your conscience to do that.
Right.
I think that's good.
It just seems like a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all good. So
right, and personally, and I'll coordinate with some listener feedback I got is talking to someone who is very against the climate change idea is that if this thing is happening, let's just assume that man is causing global warming, and the global warming is going to destroy the planet as we know it. We're screwed. You know,
we probably are.
The free market is not equipped to solve problems like that, nor is any nation government or a world government. Like, there's no way to solve it.
Right.
I don't think a free market enterprise is going to make a profit on not making the sea rise. So, and I don't think a government's going to come and do some Kyoto Protocol and save the day.
Right.
So if it is happening, we're jacked. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, actually. And you know, sad, the Earth's doing true, what it does. I think the Earth could get rid of us, and the Earth would be fine. This is a self-correcting problem.
The Earth would be pretty chill.
If we screw
that
up really, really bad, the Earth's going to bounce back. I'm not short of, you know, just global nuclear Armageddon. I don't think there's a whole lot of things we could do that in a million, 2 million, 3 million years, whatever it is, the Earth wouldn't recover. And you don't have to look far to see that. I mean, go look at one of your volcano sites like you're talking about, or, you know, there's any number of catastrophic events that happen, and nature rebuilds. It doesn't need man.
But we don't care about nature. We care about us.
Well, the Earth, well, that's true. We do. But if we screw up bad enough, you know, we're just a leech on the ass of this planet, and it'll snuff us out in about 3 seconds if it needs to. I think
millions of years from now are not going to be listening to this podcast?
They might be. They might dig it up in an archive like Mad Max style.
I can guarantee it.
Can we press this on vinyl and put it in a vault?
I think this could be we'd press it on a gold disc and put it up in Voyager 3 or something.
I think we should. Right next to Bach branded Bird Concerto.
But I think what I would look at this global warming, this climate change debate as is, you know, one of the listener feedbacks that we got was that, you know, you've got to be very, very careful to separate the science from the politics. And that was a really good point. And I think what we need to do is start that discussion and get past the politics of it and talk about what it really is and what it really isn't.
Right.
And we can't rely on the politicians or the talking heads on TV to do that because they are going to stop at that first layer and have a debate. I mean, the thing that cracks me up is like, okay, so you deny that climate change is real. What does that mean? I mean, climate change either is or isn't, regardless of what your opinion is. That's not something you can take a poll on and say, oh, well, 55% of people believe it's not real. Okay, it's not real. You know, that's like having the Earth as the center of the universe debate, and if a majority say it's true, that doesn't make it true. You know, there's a truth out there to be found, and I think that's what you've got to go look for.
Right. Yeah, and I think the politicians are in the worst spot of this whole thing. I mean, you have kind of our guilt thing, and then what do we really do, and then what's really happening, and they're standing right between what's really happening and what we feel, and they're just tugging our little strings to gain themselves influence and power.
And I think there's people that genuinely, just like my religion argument, there's people that genuinely believe in the message, and they're led by the nose by people that don't believe in the message. But that's all they've got to, you know, throw their chips in with.
Right.
And those people are using it for their own gain, whether it be to get elected or get money or, you know, any number of other nefarious purposes. But you hit on something that I think is true. And global warming is a key example. The whole the liberal guilt and conservative anger that I always bring up.
This is like that one.
This is right. You throw out global warming. Why do liberals dig that? Because we feel guilty, right?
Right, right.
We do bad stuff to the environment. It affects other people. You know, you got the Indian on the reservation with the tear rolling down his face when he sees the trash out there. You know, it's terrible. And then you tell a conservative about global warming, and what's he do? He's going to get pissed off and tell you you're wrong, and, you know, bam.
Right, right.
Your automatic reaction to the same, you know, set of input.
Right, and he's gonna go buy a Hummer just to stick it in your face.
Right, I'm gonna show you. Take your Prius and shove it up your keister.
And that's what I was talking about, kind of at the very beginning, is this idea that you know, just because you can do it, just because you can, you know, be wasteful.
If I choose to do that, so what?
Right, I mean, and I certainly
my choice.
I'm certainly not promoting a law that would prevent that. Like, I don't really think that's the government's role, but I think what I see happening that angers me sometimes is like we have this idea that the government's trying to tell me that I can't do this, so I'm just going to do it anyway, and there's no other moral check there about so the government doesn't want me to do this, so I'm just going to go do it anyway.
Yeah,
you know you can't make me recycle, so I'm going to go through, you know, all my junk in the trash.
Right.
Or I'm just going to buy endless products. Yes, you can. You can buy endless products. You can, you know, generate loads of trash.
You could, like, save your money and, you know, or give it to charity or do something, you know.
Right, right. But it's almost morally. I feel like we went through a stage there when we were just sticking it. We were counter-reacting.
Oh, and people still are, right? People on the right still do that, certainly.
Right, right. Yeah. I think we had our little SUV phase there for a little bit. I like how I always felt with the SUV thing. Like, if you got the SUV and you're carrying four kids to soccer practice, or even you have to do that once or twice a week, hey, do your SUV. I always like seeing a pickup truck that's beat up, you know, a huge, you know, F-850. I don't even know how big they get, you know. If you got a monster truck with, like, a board in the back and, like, a sandbag back there and, like, a paintbrush sticking in there, like, good job with your F-850, you know. But if you're driving it just to, like, stick it to the man, you know, and it's pristine, and you got your
Cadillac Escalade,
right? And you're doing it just because you can. Like the government's not going to tell you you can't, but there should be something else that's telling you that there's something wrong with that.
Like, I know nothing about cars, but one thing that cracks me up is I see people around where I live here driving, like, Lexus makes an SUV,
right? Right.
Lexus,
right?
Really? I mean, all you're saying is, hey, not only am I going to buy an SUV and show you my one middle finger, I'm going to buy a Lexus SUV and show you both of my middle fingers. Because I can afford it and you can't, suck it.
Right, double suck it.
Yeah, right. I just think that's crazy. I just want to key those people's cars just on principle, but, you know.
Right. And I think they're amazing.
I think that speaks to what you're saying. I mean, my argument would be, if that person wants to do that, they can do that.
Right.
And I support their right to do that. I think they're idiots, but, you know.
Right. Right.
Whatever.
They're right to do that, but I think a major motivation for them doing that is that they can.
Is that they can, and they want to show you they can.
They want to show you that they can. Right.
Exactly. Yep. And there can't be a law against that. I just think it's part of the sea change that you're talking about. You know, 10 years ago, maybe somebody would have thrown the water bottle in the ditch just to say, screw you, I don't want to recycle. And that's kind of turned on its ear a little bit, and maybe you've just got to affect that slowly.
Right, and I think when the right sort of speaks about moral decline, they start, you know, we're moving away from faith or whatever it is, and I think a point from the left is that buying the largest car you possibly can to show it off to your friends is also moral decline, and that's a moral decline that's not brought in by the government or TV, you know, it's brought in by commerce and you know, ill will.
Since you brought up faith. Well, I'm intrigued by what I perceive as sort of it's almost hypocritical, the notion that God made man stewards of the earth. Okay, that seems to be well established within the Christian faith, certainly, and I won't go any farther than that because I won't pretend to speak for the others, but. It's just funny to me that isn't more prevalent. Like, you don't have You don't have preachers standing in the pulpit telling right. their congregations that they need to recycle and that they need to conserve and, you know, all of those things. And it just seems like there should be more of that.
Yeah, I completely agree.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And I'll give a plug here for a friend of mine actually wrote a book about this. It's called An Inconvenient Purpose. And it's obviously a play on Al Gore's title. But it's all about that. It's all about how Christians should be good stewards of the mm-hmm. earth and its resources. And that's what God expects us to do.
I remember it was the 04 election. I think it was Kerry and Ed's words. I'm pretty sure it was. I don't think it was 08. You know, it was when the whole religious thing was, you know, that's the right realm, right? They control the military. They control the religion thing. So they would tout that. But they made a play, Kerry and Edwards made a play for if you are a responsible Christian, a God-fearing human being, that you need to be a steward of the environment. And that didn't get any traction, but they threw that out there to try to, you know, chip away at the lead that the Republicans had in the religious community of the right wing, and it didn't get anywhere. But it spoke exactly to what you're saying. You know, hey, if you believe these things, the natural conclusion of that is this, and
right.
And well, but they don't want to hear that, you know, or whatever the reason was, it didn't get traction. I don't know. It just didn't.
I forget who the there are. Who was the – you guys can help me. There was a evangelical preacher wrote a book that was hugely popular and spoke at one of the conventions in 2008. It was kind of controversial. Spoke at – I think it was the GOP convention.
The well-known? Well-known preacher?
Yeah, something like the Well-Tempered Life.
The Purpose-Driven Life.
There you go. Purpose-Driven Life. All right, quick Google here. Oh, it's a Google contest.
Oof.
Right, by Rick Warren. Right. So he is an example.
Thanks. Never heard of him.
I got like a two-man Google here, and you guys know things. Yeah, so Rick Warren is a you know, right down the middle kind of classic evangelical preacher and real popular with the right wing, but breaks with the right wing on environmental issues. And so he's an example.
He needs to be ostracized, then.
Yeah, we need to get rid of that guy.
Excommunicated.
Let me see if I got that right. Can you just delete this whole section if I'm completely wrong about this?
Oh, no. It stays. Matter of fact, he's just going to loop it for 2 hours. If you're right.
I had one other thing I wanted to bring up, because we kind of hit on this earlier about private ownership of natural resources. And one example that I know has been bandied about, I'm not sure how well known it is, but there's a private elephant reserve in Kenya, and it just happens to be adjacent to a national park that's managed by the government there. And, you know, somebody went in there and counted the number of elephants in both of those reserves, and the privately owned one is doing much better on conserving that resource. I mean, there's a lot more elephants living in the private park than in the one managed by the government. And that's because the privately owned one, you know, they have incentive to protect their investment. You know, they actually make money off of the tourists that,
right,
you know, come in there.
Right, there's some incentive.
Right. And whereas with the government park, there's no incentive to protect the elephants from, like, poachers and what have you.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out as an example of how a, you know, free market solution does actually protect one environmental resource.
Yeah.
I suspect it'd be equally easy to go find something that the government does that private industry doesn't, though, too. So that's an example.
Well,
right.
I think Jerry's added. He's starting to smell what the Jerry's cooking here.
6 episodes later,
it smells like omelets. I think he's building a list of little things we don't think about that we rely on the government to do that the private enterprises can do and do quite well. the Underwriter Laboratories, the the Consumer Reports, the his Elephant Reserve. Where do you get this stuff?
You think he works all day?
Right.
And I just wouldn't go so far as to say it's everything, and I think that's where I think it's more things than we take into account right now.
Right.
But I don't know that it's everything. You could do everything. I just think the natural result of that would be catastrophically bad. But if you think the result of what we're doing now is catastrophically bad, then maybe that's not really much of a change. So I don't know.
Well, you know how I feel about it.
I do. I know precisely how you feel. I don't concur with your, you know, conclusions there, but that's all right. That's why we're here.
Well, give me about six more episodes.
Yeah, right. I'm trying to look here. Like, one other article I found that was interesting was that there's a NASA satellite collecting atmospheric data. And one of the things they found was that the bleed rate of heat from the Earth's atmosphere into space is actually higher than what the global warming climate change computer models take into account.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it's another one of those things that when you show me a graph and you show me a prediction and you show me error bars and then I find out here's all these things that we're not taking into account properly, I have a lot of trouble passing a Kyoto or, you know, spending trillions of dollars in a knee-jerk reaction to something that may not affect anything. Right. You know, you may be trying to hold back the tide. You know, it's just not going to happen. You can try all you want, but it's not going to work. So I do have trouble divorcing, you know, the science from the politics, because like we talked about before, the natural conclusion of if I say I buy into this is that I must agree with all these things, and I don't. I don't agree with the knee-jerk reactions. I think it's a very valid intellectual conversation to have and try to figure out, but I don't think the government solution to that that's going to happen in the next year, which is what they'll do, is going to really solve anything other than make a lot of people a lot of money and redistribute wealth around and not accomplish anything.
Right.
So that would be my conclusion to the global warming debate. And it's not really a conclusion. It's yeah, we need to keep looking and we need to keep improving, but we need to be very careful about what we do in reaction to it.
Maybe to expand on my themes to in my little conclusion here. So like we know that government and politicians can play science in such a way to gain themselves power and influence. Do you think as far as investing in some green energy or trying to skew the energy pie a little bit towards the green economy, as it's known, love that term.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's free market backed resources there that are actively pushing?
I don't know what I was saying. Oh yeah, so you know, the electric car. Why would I, as a car company, you know, there's got to be a motive there for them to get behind it. Otherwise, the motive is going to be there for them to squash it.
Right.
But I would argue that the market is going to take care of that. Just like the market took care of IBM and just like the market is taking care of Microsoft, those things looked like undefeatable juggernauts at one time, to the point where there were companies taking them to court and right, we need to break them up and we need to do this. And in the meantime, while they're wasting time with lawyers and judges and suits and countersuits, somebody in the background is innovating and is saying, you know what, there's a market for me and I'm going to take this dude down. And it's happening in the case of Microsoft, and it certainly happened in the case of IBM, and it'll happen with the automobile industry too.
Right.
Now, where I think things go wrong, and this is one of the topics I wanted to bring up, and I'm curious, Rob, what your thoughts are on this. What do you think about this whole Solyndra thing that's going on?
I don't think I have an opinion. I don't know too much about it.
Well, it's one of those things that is part of the stimulus, and I'll admit, right, I haven't read extensively on it, but I've read enough to, you know, fire up my right wing blood. But it's one of those stories that you could switch the name Obama with Bush, and it would read just like a headline out of 8 years ago,
right?
And would infuriate the left, and the right would say, "What's the problem?" And now it's the exact opposite. But as part of the 787 quadzillion dollar stimulus package that's, you know, that managed to not make our unemployment go up to 87%, which is what would have happened.
It would have.
They gave a lot of money to a lot of companies, and there was a lot of cronyism that went on.
Sure.
You know, it was donors. It was people that worked campaigns. So we're giving hundreds of millions of dollars to these people, and what did they do? They lined their pockets, and they're filing bankruptcy now. So all these, and this is Solyndra, is one of these green initiative companies that had a donor to the Obama campaign.
Right.
Obama and cabinet members, you know, people in the Obama administration sat in on these meetings, directed money to this company to start up and do this green thing.
Right.
And it's failing. And it's failing with not government money, but our money.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know how much play it's getting because I don't watch, you know, the mainstream media, but I found articles on ABC News, in the Tribune, you know, Wall Street Journal, you know, all these places are at least talking about it. But it's one of those hope change hope things that just drives me bananas that the same shit stuff is going on now that went on 8 years ago. And, you know, now we're using the green wedge to funnel money to people instead of the Halliburton wedge
Exactly.
of fighting a war, instead of the oil wedge or whatever wedge you want to use. Now this environmental thing has just become a wedge to take care of my buddies, line some pockets. Oh yeah, we went bankrupt, but hey, I made $100 million. You know, now they're raiding these CEOs' houses and the board of directors' houses, and you know, there's going to be some scandal that comes out of this, but it's just another thing that turns people off, I think, to a movement when you see it corrupted like that.
Sure.
So I'm just wondering how the Obama camp that seems to worship him as some kind of a savior looks at stuff like that and justifies it. I don't understand how you can do that.
No.
It's very hypocritical,
and
it drives me crazy.
Well, it irritates me that, you know, I want solar panels on the top of my house. I want them to be cheap, but I don't want it at the expense of the government having to subsidize it to the point where, you know, that's what happened with Solyndra.
Okay.
That was an attempt by the government to subsidize a technology that they think should, you know, should be in the marketplace.
Okay.
Well, maybe what they were selling shouldn't be in the marketplace.
Right. Exactly.
Maybe their product sucked.
Yes.
So they deserve to go under.
And but what was the reason they
cost
money?
Us $500 million to find that out.
Right.
Right.
And what was the reason they got money versus someone else? It wasn't because their product was better or was proven. It was because
the really sad part is they're not done yet, because that was only the first loan guaranteed to come out of the Department of Energy's $30 billion pot of the stimulus package.
Yeah.
So, you know, they could conceivably do this 59 more times.
Right.
And have 59 more companies go under and lay, you know, 1,000 people each off.
Right.
So, you know,
I remember at the time
Exhibit A of why, you know, government should not be involved in that sort of thing.
I remember very distinctly a conversation Rob and I had when the stimulus was passed, and I almost remember the exact words. Rob said, "I think the amount that was passed is just about right." And I said, "I think it was about $787 billion too high." So we had a lively debate about that. But I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I think happens when you just package this massive juggernaut of a something together in order to be doing something. Right. You know, this is what happens, you know. And it's not just $500 million here and $500 million there. I mean, I bet a good chunk of that $787 billion is completely unaccounted for. You remember there was going to be websites where they're going to track every dollar, and it was going to be transparent, and we were going to show the increase in jobs and this and that. I don't think any of that has happened because it hasn't worked, but I think these are the kinds of stories that you're going to see come out of it, because in the midst of all that, people are grabbing theirs. And I would love to be the next guy in line. You know, I mean, I'll have my house get raided, and you can, you know, subpoena me, and you can go through my records, and as long as at the end of the whole thing I'm out of jail and I got $50 million sitting in the bank, sign me up. You know? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it may make me a dirtbag, but I'm a rich dirtbag, so good deal. But they shouldn't be allowing that to happen. You know, you can't hate the player. You got to hate the game a little bit. And when you enable that type of behavior, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sad that you don't know a little bit more about the Solyndra thing. I was looking forward to left-wing defense.
No, I mean, what's there to defend, I guess?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, I know this stuff's going to happen.
If this was under Bush's watch, the right wing would have a defense, I guarantee it. So.
Well, all I'll say is that it's so much nicer, you know, nice little, I mean, Solyndra just sounds nice.
He means well.
You know, there's the sunshine, you got panels, right. it makes.
It's not like Halliburton.
Halliburton, yeah, with some, what does that mean? Water and some, and some oil.
Yeah, that's like, right.
That's icky. Like, I like panels.
I think Halliburton is Latin for hunting accident, isn't it? So,
yeah, let me go check the Solyndra logo. I'm sure it's like a little leaf, like, sprouting up. Isn't that nice? Come on.
That makes the corruption much more palatable.
Right. It's like a little tasty, comforting corruption.
Mm-hmm.
It's corruption I can believe in.
Right. There you go.
That's a tagline.
What do you think about – have you seen some of these articles popping up? And I know this is op-ed material, but I still find it funny that now there's people on the left calling for Obama not to run for re-election. No. Have you read any of that?
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how fringy it is. I read some of the articles, and I thought it was really funny. It made me chuckle.
The fringe house guys, oh, they'll be suckling at the teat.
Well, exactly. And that's my whole thing. They're going to – you know, you say this now, but you don't mean it. I mean, that's right. just silly, you know. But now there's the talk about will Hillary run and this and that, and it's like, oh, this is just typical part of our election cycle, you know.
Well, we got sick of talking about Romney and Perry, so we got to, you know.
Well, that's not hard to get crazy. Sick of. So
okay. I love it. GOP debate tonight.
Wow, another one I won't watch. Who's going to win the GOP nomination? I have a prediction.
It's not going to be Ron Paul.
No, it will not be Ron Paul.
I'll say Mitt wins it.
I think the Mitt's going to win. I agree with that. I said that after the last election, and I'm standing by my prediction. So I don't know a lot about Perry, but I've heard he's really frightening. I don't know if that's...
And he keeps stepping into these controversial issues, and I think he's doing it on purpose because he thinks it makes him look folksy.
Right, right.
But,
right.
You know, George W. tried the same thing, and it worked for him because we hadn't seen it before.
Right.
Yeah. I'm with you.
And now I've seen it.
I could say with Rick Perry that I only watched 15 minutes of the debate, but I can honestly say I could not be a politician, but I could totally go up there and be Rick Perry.
Like, really?
I could answer like those questions. Right. I can answer those questions. Like question one, small business guy says, what are you going to do about this economy so that I can hire some workers? Fired out the three talking points. Tort reform is on there. Right. Lower taxes, lower regulation, and tort reform. Like, the dude's probably got like a laundromat chain or something. He's like, yeah, I'm really worried about these torts. You know, these trial lawyers are coming to get me, you know.
That's but right.
Like, but everybody knows what those three answers are. Dude just right. fires them out there and like puts a little grin on it. Like,
because my customers keep filing lawsuits against me when the change doesn't come out of the dryer.
Right, right. I got this laundry regulation all over my back.
Can you help me? My doctor said business. Right. I have to take a laxative.
Right. Got a new law from the EPA. Yeah, I mean, come on.
I think the Mitt's a little more polished and a little more.
He would never fire out an answer like that.
He's too polished.
Right. Which I think, I was going to say, turn that on its ear a little bit. That may be a bad thing, in fact, but I think that's what will survive the primary process. And I think he's more generally electable than the right-wing fringy, let's whip everybody up into a frenzy type of deal. So I don't know that the right will get excited about Romney, but I think they'll just kind of end up settling there.
And this is where the right has gut check time, because they last time they ended up with the McCain, which they hate.
Yeah, that was a disaster.
And so now I think now it's gut check time. Are we really going to do it this time?
Are we going to put the wacky person up there, or are we going to put somebody that can win?
Yeah,
or are we really wacky? But I've heard Bachman is falling in the polls, which I'm strongly encouraged by, that she's just going completely by the wayside.
Did you guys hear Rick Santorum? Apparently approached Google about his Google problem.
He does have a Google problem.
Because when you look it up, you learn bad things that he's not happy about?
Oh, no. It's worse than that.
Oh.
Yeah.
When you Google the word Santorum,
you get
something. Well, let's just say this is a family show.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. There's a word that someone has decided to...
Yeah, they redefined it. Yeah.
And it's not good.
Led by Mr. Dan Savage.
Exactly right.
Ken and I are both fans of...
Yes. Oh, Savage Love is... I haven't read it in a while, but that's some good stuff.
Anyway, continue on.
Well, I just thought it was funny that, you know, he's actually gone to Google and said, hey, is there anything you can do to help me out here? And they basically told him no.
No.
And nor should they.
Yeah. That's the way it is.
It is.
I would only encourage people to go test the Google theory if you
right.
not very easily offended. It's not good.
Yeah, I will not be linking to that in the show notes.
No, that would be wise. Does it have anything about that on his Wikipedia page?
Yes, it's there too. So
Safe there, or is it not even safe there? I mean, does it like talk about it in a way that you could learn without being offended, or is it?
It's been sanitized some.
Okay. So that might be a reasonable thing to link to. Or maybe not.
All right.
So did we learn anything about global warming? Did we solve anything here?
I think we did.
You think so? What did we solve?
I think we got a lot more to the root cause than you'll hear in most of what you see, and certainly in any presidential debate.
Yeah, true.
I think the solution is we have to wait another 40 years to find out that we still don't know.
Yeah.
And by then I'll shake my cane at it.
But hopefully. Yeah, right. And then, just like the recycling thing, there'll have been some other things that have changed that will make things better.
Right.
Hopefully. Or we'll all be dead because the sea levels will rise 486 feet or something like that. One of those.
So for next week's episode, I want to spend some time delving into each of our own personal philosophies, maybe explore that a little bit.
Philosophies on anything in particular?
Well, just politics. Our political ideologies.
Good. I was worried.
So we'll probably revisit Rob's manifesto and. Ken, you probably need to come up with something similar to that.
I need a manifesto.
Yeah.
Got a week.
The lazy man's manifesto. I think I can do that. I can come up with something.
All right.
Look forward to it.
Well, I want to give one final plug for our Facebook page, facebook.com/MidwestPeace. If you haven't, please go there and hit the like button. Leave us some comments, some feedback on this week's episode.
We're on iTunes now.
Yes, we're on iTunes. You can download us there. And maybe by next week I'll be ready to make a special announcement about another place you'll be able to find us.
Ooh. And you know the other thing? I went on to iTunes because I think that's incredibly cool that I can search on Midwest Peace Process and it actually shows up there.
Yeah.
But we're there. It's real. And then you can download episodes. You can leave reviews. Hint, hint.
Yeah.
Please leave reviews.
Please do.
But, you know, by all means, give us feedback. I think that's a wonderful way to guide the show and give us stuff to talk about. I always enjoy reading people's agreeing or disagreeing, especially the disagreeing with us, because I think it gives us more to talk about.
Yes. Agreed. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next week.
Good night.